Believe in yourself, believe in your body. Rock, 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 it's the self-esteem party.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party Podcast. I'm your host, Alana Johnston, and with me, as always, is producer slash husband slash roommate, Norm Sousa. Norm, how you doing?
Welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm back in town.
You're in LA.
You're jumping around.
I'm jumping around.
It's the happiest you've ever been.
I picked you up at the airport.
That's right.
And a slight delay.
Bit of a delay. I have a bit of a travel nightmare curse following me.
A nightmare is just a mere nightmare.
So you can imagine the trouble I'm in.
It was a bit of a nightmare.
It was a nightmare. And I did finally make it, though. But as a direct result of the lengthy nightmare, I had massive spasms that night in my already injured shoulder. And you had to witness actual delusions.
Yeah, you were slowly turning into rock at night.
Yes. And it was so scary.
You had like atrophy, like immediate rigor mortis.
I was so scared, and I don't even remember the experience. I only know the pain.
Right.
Wow. But you said I wasn't speaking English.
No, you were like, speaking like Spanish or something.
This
you
could have possessed. Been like this could have been a real holy experience for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
I should have tried holy water.
Yeah, you should have. This could have been my moment.
Just burned your skin.
I'm glad to be back, though. Nice to be back.
You got some icy hot patch on your
neck. I have an icy hot on me, and I'm feeling like $1 million. I hope this thing never comes off.
You were asking me on the way back from the airport if, are you? I was happy to be back, or what you like.
If you really missed me.
If I really missed
you. What did you miss?
Yeah, and I was telling you earlier that it's like, I miss having someone around, but not all the time. I like being alone sometimes.
Yes, and you've earned it. I'm a bit much. Here's the thing, I'm a bit much. We actually cover that in this week's episode.
Really?
I'm a bit much.
I love this guest, Kayla. She's so fun.
How can you not? She's fantastic. It's reconnecting with an old pal, and the conversation gets a little heavy at times. Okay. I will say, I mentioned a book called Being Mortal. I couldn't remember the author at the time. It is Atul Gawande. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic book that's referenced in this episode. Check it out. We also have something
recommended by Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr, which is why I listened to the audiobook and recommended it to you.
And now I'm doing a mass recommendation, which is probably going to send these books off the charts.
send them off the charts.
We also,
that's not good, actually.
Well, it's a nightmare, is what it is.
Put them on the charts.
It's a nightmare.
Oh my God, my book's off the charts.
We have
what
something,
a nightmare.
We have something exciting happening this coming weekend, BugCon.
All right, BugCon.
The event that we do not actually know what it is, but we know we have a panel. We're going to be joined by Jack Allison and Kate Raff.
Is that true?
Hosts of Jack in the AM, I think it is, or just Jack AM. Hmm. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this at the panel. We are answering questions.
You've been on the show and don't know what it's called.
I've been on it numerous times. We are answering questions from our listeners and from the audience.
Oh, are people submitting?
People are submitting. We've gotten submissions, or if there's any kind of advice that you want, all things self-esteem related and all things about anything, really, we're keeping it open. Please DM us at Self-Esteem Party on Twitter and Instagram, or you can DM me at The Only Alana Johnson on Instagram and at Alana_Johnson on Twitter, guys. Please get in on this. It's going to be huge.
We, okay, that's interesting. And we may or may not get to the hat toss. Because there might be good questions.
The hat toss of 2021, which has been an empty threat going on now for a couple of weeks, and we might make good on it.
But maybe we won't.
Is the theme of this podcast.
Who knows?
Shall we get to it?
Oh, we might as well. I mean, what do we have to say? Nothing.
No, absolutely.
You're back.
Nothing.
Great
I'm
to
back.
Be back. We're having laughs. I've stopped eating food over the sink.
Wow. What progress.
Yeah.
An old friend, a dear friend to both of us. My God.
So funny.
So funny. So amazing to reconnect with. And we talk about our friendship and what really happened in it. It's fantastic.
You know what's really interesting about Kayla is she's an artist.
Yeah.
She makes improv and art.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
Bless her and bless this episode and bless you, Norm. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kayla Lorette right after this break. It's a self-esteem party. It's a self-esteem party. Kayla, my old friend, how are you? My dear old friend, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's so nice to be talking to you.
Isn't it just? I'll tell you what, I just saw you when I went home and I didn't get enough. So here I am seeing you again.
Honestly, we had to do it. We had to see each other in person, catch up. It's been so long. But I feel like the energy would have been very wild if this would have been the first time we chatted after a long time.
No, too wild. Can't do it. I won't do it. I refuse.
No, not good for either of us.
Not good.
We'd be on edge.
It would be one of my edgier conversations. Okay, Kayla, we like to start the podcast with a self-esteem party check-in. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling self-esteem-wise today, recently?
Wow. Okay. You know what? I feel like self-esteem naturally takes a low around 3 p.m., which is where we are now. I would say... I would say you can't kind of give up on the day yet, so you're still fighting. So I would put myself at like a positive 5 to 6, you know?
Okay, I'll take a positive 5 to 6 because a lot of the times people clock a 5 as neutral. But if you're putting a positive spin on it, like you said, there's still hope for the rest of the day.
Exactly. Things could turn around.
Okay, no? Wait. Hold on. If this is the theory, what would you say, like earlier today, what would you say you woke up in?
I woke up high because I'm always like, okay, God, what's today going to be? So I probably woke up around like a 7 or 8, then waited too long to eat. That dipped me down low. And I'm 3. Walking around the streets, taking people in very suspiciously. But then I went and had breakfast and then popped back up. And now we're just kind of like a leaf in the wind, kind of slowly going down, hoping for another gust
honestly,
to kind of send us up again.
Listen, that puts a lot of pressure on the podcast. Like, what if I'm your gust?
I hope you're the gust. I hope you're a gust up. I hope you're gust right up.
I hope I'm the positive gust right up. Oh my God. I would say that, like, you know what? I'm still reeling on the good trip that I had home. Intense trip, which we'll get into. But good in the sense that I've never gone that long and have it be so peaceful. You know me. I'm a 4-day, yes. I'm a 4-day max, and then my gust sweeps me right back to LA.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad you had a positive trip.
Yeah, I would put it at a positive 5 or 6.
Because I feel like usually there's just a lot, you're getting a lot of energy from your parents.
That, oh, yeah.
While loving and kind of love bombing in a way is kind of overwhelming. And I know, I've got it, when I go home and visit my parents on Vancouver Island, there's definitely a cap. It's a bit longer, I can do 10 days, but I start to feel a bit on edge.
You know what? It's edgy like the conversation would have been, and that's what it feels like when I go home. Like, when I saw you, was I wearing my mom's purse that we spent 45 minutes arguing that I didn't want to wear? Yes, I was. Is it because she claims it's more practical than my other purse, which is also her purse? Yes, that is the exact reasoning. I mean, this is what I spend my time doing. And everybody wonders why I wasn't texting back. It's like, dude, this is what I'm doing. It's a purse fight of 2021.
I've got a debate between different Marshall's purses and how much can I put in.
That was the problem, is she didn't like where I was putting my water bottle in the original purse. But this one had a side pocket that you could easily access the water bottle. So for her, it was a clear winner.
God forbid you get a dry throat and you're having to dig around. You could choke to death. And this is something that is in a mother's mind. You know?
Yeah, at all times my mom's worried if I will or will not choke to death from some dryness. You know, and this is why I don't want to be a mother. These are the kinds of stresses I just can't take on.
Oh, and I know I'd have them. The way I worry about the smallest things, if I had something that I loved that much, I would be suffocating.
Do you feel like you've always been a worrywart?
Yes.
What? Always. Okay. Okay. What would be like the hierarchy of what you worry about most? Like, if you had to put categories, what would it be?
I think You know what? I had a very relieving, like a realizing moment once when I was at a cottage with a group of people and everyone was having fun and kind of doing their own thing. And it was very peaceful and fine. And then out of nowhere, and I couldn't even control the words, I turned to the entire room and just said, "Is everyone happy right now?" And everyone turned and looked at me. And then I was embarrassed because it was just this very basic thing where I needed kind of group peace. And I just needed to, I needed that information and that validation. So I think it's often about like the peace and comfort of those around me. Cause I mean, I don't care if I'm uncomfortable.
No, cause you others, often are.
I mean, obviously I was in pain, desperately screaming out, "Is everyone happy right now?"
Oh my God. I wish I had been there. Wait, what answers did you get?
Everyone turned and went, "Yeah, we're playing a board game and drinking beer. Like, yeah. Everyone's fine and happy."
Literally the happiest they've been in so long. And you're sweating it. Now, wait, were you happy in that moment?
As soon as I got the answer, yeah, then I was fine.
Oh, my God. It's true, though. You have been a worrywart. You do care a lot about the people around you. And that says a lot about you, but, and we kind of touched on this when we were talking a couple of days ago. Sometimes it comes across as deflecting. So if I'm going to worry about everybody else except my own comfort and discomfort, it seems a lot easier than being like, I'm uncomfortable right now and I either can or can't do something about it.
Completely, which I think maybe in a way that's too gendered, but does feel like a very maternal instinct, where I feel like a mother will sit like on a glass covered stool, but if everyone else is like comfortable in their chairs, then there's a peace. But then that can be annoying. It's like, just take care of yourself.
It's the, honestly, dude, it's the martyr syndrome. My mom does it and it makes me mental. Like, just, I will never forget. This is the perfect story that reflects my mom, who you know very well. Yes. We were all going to Niagara Falls to go to some outlet malls. And my mom made a huge to-do. She always made a huge to-do about bringing a coat everywhere you go. You know what I mean? Like, this is why I moved to LA, to free myself from the coats. But anyways, so she was like, we were driving to go get, like, she was taking forever in the mall. Me and my siblings went with my dad to go drive and get something. And then the whole point is that for some reason, when she was done, this is like before anybody had cell phones, she was waiting outside for us and like didn't have her coat because it was in the van and we drove away and came back and had been outside in the freezing cold for so long. And we were like, "Mom, why didn't you wait inside?" And she was like, "Because, Elena, I was waiting for you guys," and was like freaking out because she for once did not have her coat. It was like, but she was trying to be like, "I waited outside to make it easier for you guys." So there's not even any logic, and it's still her being the hero that she has decided she needs to be.
Completely. If you look too hard at these things, it's like, ugh, this is like, this is putting a lot of it on other people then. But it's, the impulse is good, of course.
Yeah, to want to be there and take care of other people. But it's like, I mean, what would you say if you had to say you deflect from something or dismiss something of yourself? What do you think would be like one of the main things? And like, why do you think it'd be that?
Oh my goodness. I think probably just like, I think probably simple things, just like, am I comfortable? Am I happy? Am I like, is it like, it's even hard to wade through. And I feel like that's what, I'm sure you're sick of people talking about the pandemic here. But I think that that's what's been very interesting about being inside and with yourself so much, is that you kind of, there's no choice. You can't distract yourself with other people's like wants. So now I feel like, do I want to be hanging out with this person? Do I want to be social tonight? Do I want to just be quiet? Like, these things that are so basic.
You know what? I'm not sick about talking about the pandemic, which is a fun way we say it. I'm not sick of it at all because it's still very much so happening. Obviously, yes, it's still affecting us. And even being vaccinated and like able to socialize, whether indoors, outdoors, however anybody's doing it, I already needed a break because I was like so much throughout the pandemic trying to be there for others, trying to like really step up, that when I went home, I feel like as much time as I spent locked in this house, I didn't spend it with myself. You know what I mean? And when I went home, I had to like shut out everybody else and turn it in. And I realized I had been carrying around so much shit to the point where I like threw my shoulder out and it won't get better. And it's entirely stress induced. Entirely.
Oh, completely. It's, yeah, absolutely. You can't turn your head around.
No.
Which, you know, is your body saying, stop looking around at other people?
You're right. My body's saying, stay present, stay focused. I think we finally nailed what the stress was. It was me taking too much time checking other people out.
Who's over here? Look behind me, you know? And it's people that you love got to get in front of you because you're not turning your neck anymore.
You are absolutely right. Get in front of me, but don't get in my way and try and stop me. That's a fact.
No, get in front of me and walk backwards at the pace I'm going at.
Yeah, 100%. Inconvenience yourself. Put yourself in danger. Leave the house without a coat to make sure that I have mine. You know what I mean?
It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that, like, I agree with you about with the pandemic and being alone with yourself. And I feel like I didn't hit my lowest lows until things really did start to turn around, a bit of a turning point. I know now it's obviously dicey again, but at that bit of a turning point, because then I had to ask myself, now that I had the option to go back out into the world or to see whoever, what and who was worth it?
Completely.
And that makes me feel bad to say that, but really it's what and who is worth it. Like, before it was so easy to be like, oh, too bad we can't hang or this or that. And then now you're like, oh, no, we can in one way or another. And like, do I even want to do it? And that's like scary.
Completely. It's kind of it's like an emotional elimination diet. Like you were stripped away of all of these things. And now you're like, what can I bring back in piece at a time? And does it feel good for my body? And I think we were talking about this a bit when we saw each other, too, of just you and I have been working since we were young, like, and going and going and going. And the pandemic has been this kind of momentum stop. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's important because both you and I like to work. But it's been nice to be like, oh, you just have to sit around and take stock and see what's valuable.
Yeah, dude. I feel like that's why this trip home was so important to me, because I think I value family a lot more than I let myself believe, because that's a big part of my deflecting, because I feel so bad being so far away from everybody. I mean, you're far away too from your family as well, from your parents and everything. So it's like,
totally,
you feel a sense of guilt, and then I'm being selfish, doing my own thing, and then just being home. And it was like, you know, seeing Tay-Tay and everything who's been in the hospital. That's for anyone who hasn't been following the hot story, that's my grandmother, had a stroke and is in the hospital. And it's like saying a goodbye to her that like might be the last goodbye. I mean, I canceled seeing you for a patio coffee. Couldn't do it. And it was me being like, oh my God, I've like felt so bad this whole time not to be near everybody. And now it's like I'm about to leave again.
And you need to like arm yourself a bit for that. Like it's almost too painful to be away from family. So if you think about it too much, it's just too hard. Like I always feel like I get the most emotional about seeing my family or realizing I miss them right before I go on a trip or right after. Like during, I feel like I can be present, but right before I'll get so anxious about, oh, I'm a bad daughter, I haven't been back, all this stuff. And it's just really the weight of just loving them and missing them and having to make myself vulnerable to that feeling.
Yeah.
Because you have to kind of protect it because it's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming and it's really hard to think about. And it's like with all this stuff happening with Tay-Tay, and it's like I'm essentially like rushing back to see her before she passes. Then it's like to get on a plane and then it's like she's still alive for whatever short amount of time that's going to be. And I'm gone again. I don't know, dude. It was just like when I was leaving, like, I didn't tell you because I didn't get a chance to talk to you because I left, obviously, the next day, flew home. But it was like I went and saw her. I had some Arabic stuff to say to her that I learned in the Arabic class. So I was like, hi, how are you? And are you going to drink this coffee? Do you want some water? Like all this kind of conversational stuff she taught me. And I could, you know, she's like kind of smiling. And then we talked for a bit and then it was time for me to go because she was like going to take a nap or whatever, my mom was going to force her to take a nap, however that's been working between those two. Don't bother interfering. And then it was like I turned to leave. She grabbed my hand and kissed it 3 times, like because half of her is paralyzed and the other half can move. And she grabbed my hand and kissed it 3 times. And it was like I turned around and like waited till I left the room. I was with my dad and started fucking bawling my eyes out because it's like, she knows it too. And I'm just like, that's it. That's the goodbye. But it's like, I'm not there. for the actual goodbye. Fuck, dude. It was mental. I felt so bad canceling on you. It was mental.
No. Though. It's so much. Like, it's... I've had my grandparents, like, on my mom's side, I've experienced them both in palliative care, both with lung cancer, which is just horrifying to see. And you don't see death, like, the bomber on the pod.
No, please.
It's like seeing a body kind of starve away or get prepared to, like, move into, you know, passing on. It's just a crazy thing. The smell. Like, there's, like, things that are really crazy. And when I, you know, traveled home to say goodbye to my grandmother, I could tell that she could tell that this is going to be the last time. And she is a woman who never wants pictures or anything, but she was able to, like, communicate, like, take a picture of Kayla and I. My mom took these pictures. It was really emotional. Like, I was holding her hand. Then she kind of gestured for my mom to come, and we came and sat down, and we were, holding her hand with her. And she was trying to say something, and we leaned in, and she started to say goodbye. And my dad was not there. My mom and I are crying. We're holding each other's hands. And then she says goodbye. And then she kind of, like, gives us this look. And then she goes, goodbye. And my mom goes, oh, do you want us just to leave right now? And she's like, And she just was tired. But it did.
What a huge buildup.
We were like, oh, my God. And my mom and I are looking at each other. And we're both crying. But really, she was just kind of cranky and wanted to fall asleep. But I think she had her goodbye, and then she was emotionally done with it. She was like, you're leaving. I don't want to belabor this. Like,
yeah.
It's so intense for her. And I'm sure that's why you felt like not sharing those tears to her face, because, you know, she knows what's going on.
She knows painful. What's going on. And, like, I don't know if your grandparents also had this experience, but it's like, she's done. She wants to be done. She doesn't want to live this way. She had made that very clear when she was alive and always kind of promoted strength and health and, like, kind of to a joking point about it. And which was amazing and so funny. That's why she was so youthful. And then you see it and you're like, I just feel so, it's like it's her living fucking nightmare. Especially her. You know what I mean? And it's like, and there's nothing I can do about it.
It's so difficult. Because it is kind of, I feel like, whatever your mode is in life is, like, it's still there in your last days. For my grandmother, she was, like, very private, very organized. And I think the pain for us was watching her not be able to be in control, which so was. And it was so crappy because you're like, this is a woman who, like, everything is organized, ready to go. She took care of everything. And now just this process of waiting is so frustrating for her.
Oh, my God.
It's like, there's nothing you can do. You're like, I know. Like, it's so crazy. It's a very obviously dark thing to experience, but also, I think, quite incredible to witness someone in that time. Because it's like, it's like giving birth. It's like the other side. It's a whole process. It takes time to pass on, and it's just, it's the other side of life.
Now, here's what I want to know. When you were experiencing that with your grandparents, your grandma in particular that you had just said, did it make you think about your own mortality?
You know what? No, I think it made me think of my parents a lot. I'm an only child.
It made me think of my parents. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Just like I'm watching my mom experience this. Like, I was so sad for my grandmother, but she had been sick for a long time. And once you understand that they're going to pass on, you're like, okay. But then your love kind of goes to, especially my mom, because it's her mother. And it was like focusing on that, but also just like, not that I'm thinking about them being older, but that definitely is going through the mind of like, God, it's really hard. With a parent getting sick, like, what do you, you've got to be there. It's so painful. All these things come up. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like, I started talking like, so it's also my mom's mom. And, you know, I've been really worried about my mom. Of course, she's so strong. Mom's just kicking the gear that way. You know what I mean? Cause they have to learn to push through without their coat in life. But it's like, I've been so worried about her, and I don't know how she's doing it, because it's like she goes there every day and like just has to like watch it. And then my parents started talking about their will and, you know, living will and like all their wishes or whatever. I told my mom flat out, I hear one cough out of you, I'm pulling the plug. It's as simple as that. I don't need this bullshit. I told her, watch yourself. Yeah, watch yourself. Because I'm coming.
Coughs.
Yeah, I'm coming for you. You better watch out.
We're on a phone call and you got a dry throat. You better be putting yourself on mute because I'm coming right back.
Unless you have an easily accessible water for your dry throat, you are fucking toast. I can tell you that much. So yeah, mom, you might want that purse back.
Oh my God. It's so crazy. Well, it's, and for your mom, I think it's something, I feel like this happens a lot where I think the like the day-to-day care with an ailing older parent usually falls on a daughter.
Yes.
Like the, and it is that kind of switch like of like the maternal taking care thing, which my mom had to, was the one that was so day-to-day. And it's just, it's also just so much work.
Like, oh my God, so much. My mom's there for like 6 or 7 hours a day. Like, oh, so much work. And you're right about the daughters. While I was there, I was reading a book called Being Mortal. And great book, great read, very, like, matter of fact. It's this doctor who wrote it. You know what? His name escapes me. I'll have to look it up and say it in the intro with Norm. But this doctor writes it from a very, like, a medical standpoint and then, like, a humane standpoint and, like, all these different ways about being, like, here are all the things to consider, all the ways to cope, to deliver news, to think about your own mortality. Like, it was really amazing. But man, it's like the timing of it. And like, then once you kind of are reading about what it could be like from their perspective, you're just like, oh fuck, dude. Like, everyone wants out. It's people's worst nightmare to go in such a way of dragged out pain. It's like everybody's worst nightmare.
I hope, anyway, that, like, I always feel like I'm using the wrong term for this, but, like, the assisted death programs.
Oh, yeah.
It has a more official term.
It does,
but I really feel like, dark thing, I feel like as the boomers start to get sicker in this, I feel like they're really going to, like, make that program a lot more accessible and easier because there's so many of them, and they got power and they got money, and I feel like they're going to make that system better because, yeah, who wants to be stuck in palliative unable to fucking swallow or, like, communicate and having to watch people come in and look at you for the last time? Like, it's like, get me out of here.
Oh, my God, get out of my room. It's like, you have even got, like, to be kidding me.
I don't even like a birthday. Too many people looking at me. It's like...
I can't stand him. Yeah. And now this massive goodbye. And it's like, I'm not even in a good outfit. My hair's not done. Like, I can't even, you know what I mean? It's like, when it's my time, like, have me somehow explode in a car looking great. And there was like photo right before or something from like a dash cam or something like that.
I want people that I like around. We have a big meal. We drink wine. I say goodnight. And then that's it.
And then this I explode. The it's as simple as that.
I walk into the middle of a field and explode. And I mean, that's a mess for everyone. But if the field is kind of fallow, I can just rot into the soil
that's
and
what
kind
I'm
of
saying.
Be helpful. That's would be lovely.
That would be just fantastic. And then, of course, my mom is like, because they're talking about they bought a like grave plot like for cremation, and my mom's like, Helena, we can get 20 bodies in there at least. And I was like, mom,
that is
like, stop trying to sell me on your burial plot here for all of us to be cremated together. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, I would say, though, and maybe you've mentioned this on the podcast, that one of my most like tender memories of your Tay-Tay is going to her condo and having her walk around and explain how many people could sleep there.
Yeah, I've never brought
and
it up.
I want to say it was 20. So there's something going on that's even in the afterlife. How many cousins can we get into this? And so I find that quite beautiful, even though it's a bit dark and maybe you don't want your ashes to be crammed in with everyone else's. But
yeah, but that's the way you sleep. That's a Tay-Tay sleep right there. It's true. She lived in originally a one bedroom condo that then got turned into somehow like a three bedroom condo. And then each room, makeshift room, has within it like 5 to 7 beds.
Oh, she was promoting that someone could sleep kind of under a table that she'd kind of lay a curtain over.
Makeshift table.
Like, well, that's not, who wants that?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Somebody took it.
Yeah. Hey.
Wow. Wow. Oh my God. What a great memory. This, you see, this is the legacy I want to pass on. This is what I want to talk about at the funeral. The amount of beds, the sleeping arrangement, how practical of a woman she was. I gotta say, dude, being home with you and like getting to see you and talk with you for our 7-hour hangout that nobody else wanted to attend. Just so everyone knows, we have to backtrack. This is what happened. Kayla and I made plans to hang out, and we made a huge to-do about who will be invited. We were going to go to a patio, and we made a huge to-do about who will be invited, and we were being really select about it. We ended up blasting a ton of people. Nobody wrote back. We had seen that people had seen the messages. We got one heart emoji or like a thumbs up, and literally everybody ditched us.
It was kind of the most, like, you know, you and I haven't hung out one-on-one in so long. Oh my God, so long. But it used to, like, we were thick as thieves together every single day, roommates. Like, but the energy of that hangout felt classic to me because it was you and I at first so confident about, oh, here are the people that will invite. And we'll find, you know, they're so lucky. And then an hour later, we're both kind of, anytime our phone goes off, heads whipping, this must contribute to your neck pain, to see if someone was coming. And I was having a blast with you. I was happy not to have anyone come. But to go from so confident, we're so popular, we got to make this elite list, to literally no one wanting to come out, felt like a very nice microcosm of an energy that you and I share and I enjoy very much.
Wait,
it was perfect.
Kayla, this is just a daily experience for you. Wake up, excited we're going to see each other, go to the hangout, blast it out. So be like, okay, we're having a good time. We'll see. It's going to turn up tonight. Then nobody gets back to us. And then by the night, we are defeated by the day. But I was having the time of my life. And we really, I got to say, not to be like repetitive of our conversation, but just to speak on what you were saying, of being thick as thieves and everything and living together, working together on the kids show, like everything. It's like, crazy. I will say it was so nice to not air things out, but just reflect back on that time in our life because it was so, we were like set up to be best friends when we met on stage. Like a bunch of people knew me and knew you and knew we were meant to be together. And we were set up to meet in the middle of an improv show on stage. Love at first sight, went off without a hitch. But then it's like, it puts a lot of pressure on you to,
oh my God,
be together and be this unit. And I feel like I'm a couple years older than you, so it was kind of a bit more of a transitional time and not wanting to be in Canada, knowing I wanted to be somewhere else. And I feel like you suffered greatly because of it. not to laugh, but I feel like you took a couple of hits there. I figured it out.
It's so nice though to air those things out because I had always been holding that I had just not, you know, I had not been there for you through that transitional time. But it was so intense. And what is valuable to me is that there's just so much there still and so much love.
Yeah.
So it was such a genuine connection and bond that, of course, we were crazy. Like, I think about how we were when we were roommates. Like, at a point we were really just waking up at 10 a.m., smoking a lot of weed.
Oh my God, tons.
Watching The Wire on one of the smallest TVs I've ever seen. Then ordering like Boston pizza. And like, it was a very intense time every day together.
Yeah.
That was so, so fun. But of course, not a sustainable
thing. Not sustainable. So much fun. That's what was so hard about it. Because on paper, or like according to everybody else, what you would see, it was nothing but fun and good times and everything. Yeah. And it's like, I felt like I was really suffering inside quietly of like, you know, on medications that weren't quite right, kind of being misdiagnosed, not really being able to like vocalize how I was feeling like nobody understood me, probably because I was like incoherent about how I felt and like couldn't really, you know, nail down what everything was. But it's like, I didn't, in no way did I think you abandoned me or turned your back on me or something, or when I left. It's like, I felt like a part of me ran away, and not from you, but just from life. And then I carried a lot of shame and embarrassment, and I'm like, a lot embarrassed about a lot of my actions, and especially with you. I'm like, truly, when I think back on it, I'm like, I don't know. I was so fucking out of control.
Well, I don't even think back on it being out of control. I mean, there were elements that felt out of control for both of us, but we were so young and what we were doing was so intense. I mean, now you look back on us being on three seasons on like a kid's show on YTV and it's funny, but it was also like, it was really intense at that age to have like, be on TV, yeah. have a schedule like that. Like it was a really big deal. And I think both you and I struggle with vulnerability and we were both very exposed to each other. So that comes with shame as you get older because it's like, what did you see in me?
Oh
like,
my God.
I revealed it all. And then when you see that person, it's so intimate. And the hope is that, of course, there's like, oh, I saw a cough.
It was a throat clearing, but it was because it was
true. I don't see a water anywhere.
and I tried to hide it from you so much. I was like waiting till you weren't looking to do it and moved away from the mic.
You gotta know I'm always watching. But yeah, I think it's just, I feel that way with anyone that like has seen me go through hard times or be really emotional. Like it's really difficult because it's, I don't think you and I like to be particularly seen like that at times, or like I'm more comfortable with it now, but I had a lot of time to be comfortable with that. And even still, I don't love to be completely exposed to people.
But it's like, I feel like I agree with you. And like, I feel like I really put myself out there on this podcast, but I'm also in control of it. So it's like the information people get about me, like I made a choice to talk about Tay Tay today because it was recent. It's why I went home. I knew at some point I'd have to like, you know, get it off my chest. I'm sure the conversation's not done with this, but it's like, I'm in control of that. Nobody caught me on a bad day.
But also, you know, you're not going to kind of be bringing up the Tay-Tay stuff with some UCB guy. I mean,
no, but it's true. I know Tay-Tay.
I know you. And this is a safe place to share that. I mean, you'd be like, oh, sorry. And it would be very awkward, but this is a space where you could share and you know, it's kind of safe because I have context for it, which even if you feel like you still are kind of, there's some rigidity or you're in control of how you're expressing your emotions, that's like still so good. It's important.
It shows maturity. And when we were catching up with each other, I could really feel how much more mature we both were. And it was so interesting because for so long, I felt like all my old friends, like all you guys from back home, didn't get me. We got along and really well, and you guys were like my survival, like my God, thank God for all the good times. But when I was alone, I felt like no one got it. And that's really common in your 20s. So it's like that. I'm not special. It's very common. But I feel totally. Like having mental health issues as well on top of it without proper medication really added to it and made it so drastic that I felt like I had to leave. But then it's like being home on this trip, I felt like you guys were the only ones that got me. Like nobody was like pressing me about anything. Nobody was like trying to pull stuff out of me that I wasn't ready to get out. Everything felt, I hate using this word, but organic, really free flowing. And it was just what I needed. I just needed the invasive break. You know what I mean?
Totally. And maybe too, like in the period you're in right now, it's nice to go back to people that knew you, have known you for, you know, in a different context at that time. There's like a shorthand there that is comforting.
Yeah.
Especially when you're coming back to deal with family stuff. It's like,
well, you guys were all like at my beginning experience of Toronto because I had only been there like 6 months out of college before I moved to Chicago. So kind of when I got back, you came shortly after I did. And all the people I saw when I was home were like the main people. I didn't see that many of you guys, but you guys were the main ones that I like spent all my time with. And it's like, I was excited to come back and be like, don't worry, I'm normal now.
Do you feel like that when you come back to Toronto? Is that a point of anxiety or what that you, when you do see people, like, thank God Comedy Bar was an open or any kind of like venue space where you had to see like 60 people that used to know
Yeah.
Which is a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah.
But do you feel stress or do you feel quite like seen? Like when you see people that knew you before, do you feel like you have to be a certain way or has that kind of calmed?
You know what? That's a really good question. I guess if I had to answer it, I used to a lot more than I do now. I felt like I had a lot to prove, especially being a Canadian that moved to LA, which, like, you know, a lot of people try to do, and it doesn't always work out, or it doesn't work out the way you necessarily thought it would, or the way you told people it would. So it's like, for a while, I felt like I needed to justify that move and be like, see, look how well I'm doing. And now, after just years of being here, I'm more excited to just be able to go home and be myself. I'm realizing that's actually what's happening when I go now. But I agree with you. The seeing 60 people at once, or however many at once in a venue, all of a sudden I'm back in the resume game where I'm like, here's what I've been up to. Here's what I'm doing. And it's not, it doesn't serve me. And it's not real. They're only hearing the best things about me. They're not hearing the worst.
Well, that too, I feel like, is a growing up thing. Because I think for a long time, as people that work a lot, you're just so, your personality is so woven into your career that when someone asks, how are you, it's like instinctual to be like, I've been doing this and this, I'm hoping to do this. And it's so unnatural and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Now we're a bit older. It's like, I don't care. Like, how are you really?
I don't care, man. I just want to, like, not even the word make amends, because it's not like, it's not like you and I had some giant fallout, or like I made a bunch of enemies or something like that. Yeah. But it's like, I had said this to you when I saw you, and I'll say it again. It's like, I'm really happy for the opportunity to apologize. And it's not something you asked. It's not something you require. We already had a beautiful hangout and have stayed in touch over the years. But it's something I've always wanted and needed to do. Just like, I'm sorry I loved you too hard.
And I'm sorry I loved you too hard. We burned
way too bright and way too hot, and it's like, it sounds so stupid to say, but it's honestly how I feel. Like, I'm like, it was too much.
But that's why it's so funny, because it's exactly like this hangout where we're texting everyone and no one wants to come. I feel like the thing I learned from you that I valued so much, but looking back, is very ridiculous, was this us versus them energy, which has made me more of a fighter for things that matter, and like made me protective of my taste and the kind of work I do. But it's always laughable, because when we were like in our early 20s being like, you know, fuck these people, they don't get it, really no one cared, and it was us just alone in an apartment saying this to each other. But that was so fun.
Like, just so everybody knows, we had no enemies. Everything was fine. No. We had plenty of friends. Everyone was nice.
There was no drama. But it was very much like, they don't get it. And it's like, no one cares. And no one's checking in. And it's you guys alone in this apartment. I mean,
that apartment, too. Remember our landlady, Belinda?
Oh, my God. Didn't she have twins?
Yes, she had twins, and then she was really worried when we moved out, was our friendship going to be okay? She didn't worry about breaking the lease. She was worried about, are we going to be okay? And honestly, I want to contact her now and let her know we are.
Send her this episode, because, you know, just in the same way we felt we needed to apologize to each other, I bet she wants to know.
And she has a right to know. She was kind of there in the thick of it with the twins, of course.
With the twins, of course.
It's a lot, though. It's like, it's a lot to live with friends. It's like,
it's crazy.
It was a lot. And it was like, because you don't realize how, like, the happiest I ever was. And of course, I love living with Norm. But it's like, when I was living on my own, I was like, oh, this is why everyone at some point in their life needs to live alone. Because you have to learn how to truly decompress and unwind on your own before you can show anyone else in the world it. Like, if you had a partner moving forward that you move in with or something like that.
Yeah, just what are the list of things that you know will self-soothe you, or like calm you down, or just even the practice of recognizing your emotional ups and downs, be it day to day, week to week. Just so you can like try your best to articulate them to another person, because again, it's very exposing to live with someone.
Dude, when I moved in with Norm, I had to have a house meeting about the way I work. Because I was like, okay, when this, like, here's the cleaning for starters. This is how the place needs to be. Otherwise, it makes me feel this way. Here's what I need. Here's what I don't expect from you. Here's what I do expect from you. And likewise, he had to do the same. Because you're roommates. And it's like, if somebody's there all the time, especially during the pandemic, like, I want to ask you what your self-soothing techniques were, because it's really hard to maintain those when someone else is there. It's like, you don't realize how many weird things you do and weird you look and whatever when you're doing some of these techniques, and you're like, I can't have these prying eyes on me. You know, Norm always prying away, desperate to know what I'm doing.
Oh, little Snoop.
Little Snoopy Snoop. But what would be, like, what are some of your self-soothing or, like, self-care? Oh, Norm's looking at me, shaking his head. Wow. Oh, and look Come who's on. Prying. Look who's prying on the podcast. You see Try what to I mean? Get in. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah. As if he wants to be the producer of the podcast. No, he wants to sit and listen to the little conversation.
He hates producing, but he loves the info. He's dying to know what I'm up to.
He's a gossip at heart.
Yeah, you know Norm really getting in the thick of it, please. But what's the self-soothing thing that you do? What are some things? Toss them to me.
I think for me, I guess... Maybe this, I don't know. It doesn't matter what it sounds like. I'm really, really, I really enjoy cooking. Mm-hmm. And it's like whatever love language, da, 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 da. But I find just the process of planning what we're going to eat, getting the groceries or like assembling things, taking my time. And sometimes like my happy zone is like iPad with some crappy show on it and then making a meal for too long. I feel like that will wash away any tensions because it's something that I'm good at that isn't related to comedy or anything like that. So there's like a pride and a self-esteem thing I take away from being able to do it. And I like, and I, back to like the like, is everyone happy thing? I do just get energy from being able to do something for another person.
Yeah.
And we have to eat anyway. So that I feel like is very much my dad. He's this
way. I was just about to say, dude, that's how, that's when we went and I went to go out to your childhood home and whatever, it's like your dad was all about that menu. And he's so happy doing it. And I'm so glad he passed that on to you. And you know what? When we were talking earlier about control, it's like that's you being in control of your happiness. The ability to cook. There's no audience there of like, in, like at a show where who's clapping and applauding or not, who's dead silent. It's like, it's just you and the food. And if the other person doesn't like it, they're still so grateful that you did it. So there is a shred of success no matter what.
Totally. And it's also some alone time where it's like, this is something I just enjoy and is meditative. And it's a skill that I can get better at that I'll always have.
Yeah.
Which is so nice. But it's, I know the ways in which it's annoying. Like my mom and dad enjoy this together, so it's like the first conversation you have every day is what are we going to have for dinner, and I've had to like learn to wait at least till after breakfast to be bringing this up with Tom because I know it's annoying.
Yeah, my it's brain with Norm just wants and to I talk too. About it.
I like have had to learn that maybe like the first thing that a person hears when their eyes wake up shouldn't be like, what do you feel like for dinner? Cause here's some options. And I've been up for like an hour going through different things I'm thinking about.
Like, I'm not even the cook. And I like to ask Norm right away when he gets out, what are we having for dinner? So mine's even worse because I'm like asking him, what are you going to cook for dinner? I do all the dishes and the cleaning. So we have like an even trade off. But it's like, and half the time he just looks at me and goes, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, well, let me know when you do. Like, so pathetic, desperate for him to tell me.
You know what I realized, I think, over the pandemic is something that I really don't like to experience, which I just recently have been able to, like, articulate with myself and with Tom or people around me, is, like, I hate, like, liminal time, like, something between activities.
Okay.
So, like, if there's, like an hour where I don't really know what the plan is, I'm so uncomfortable and I want like to know. And even if it's like we're just going to sit on the couch and do nothing, I almost need to just have that permission in my mind so I get quiet. And I think being able to like anticipate dinner or anticipate like an activity, then my brain has all this extra energy so then it can just like it can burn itself off planning.
Right.
But if it's like nothing and I have to just sit in not knowing like, are we going to go out? Am I going to cook dinner? Are we going to order in? Are we going to be separate? Like my brain gets too knotted up in that.
I like a pointless. Plan. I like a plan.
I love a plan.
I love a plan. And my mom and dad were making fun of me, which is so crazy because both of them are quite controlling. But my mom and dad, well, my mom a lot more common for moms, so no slam on you, Amal. But like, I'd wake up in the morning, go sit with them when they were having their coffee, and I was like, okay, what's on for today? That's like the way I say it. I go, what's on for today? And my mom was like, wow, Alana, you really like to hone in on a schedule, which like, by the way, their schedule's the exact same every day. So it's like, I don't know why she's acting. Like, I mean, including the time they get up, the time they get back from their morning walk. Like, I'm talking like to a T. But it's like, they're coming down on me because I want to know what's going on. And keep in mind, I have to participate in the day with them. I'm doing what they're doing. And they're holding it over me and not telling me what I'm doing for the day.
I couldn't stand that.
No.
I'm like, it's okay. If the plan is just plain, like, we're going to go on a walk, then we're going to drive to Costco, and then we're going to come home, then we're going to, like, whatever. That's fine. I'm really content doing the most boring things.
Yeah.
But I like to know what it is, because otherwise my brain, the worrying, I feel like then I can be thinking about anything. It's too open-ended.
Norm just walked in with groceries, and I'm like, you're just going to spring this on me like this in the middle of a recording as if I'm not already stressed out? Because the hour before the recording was like dead air time for me, and I didn't have anything to do, and I was waiting like to record with you. And it was like, it was one of those things, like for a whole hour, I was like, what do I do with myself? Because you can't start something because I know I'm going to record.
Got an hour.
That's what I'm saying. You only got, this is what I'm fucking saying, dude. See, you get it. This is what I mean. Yeah. This is why you need old pals. This is it. You just get it.
Yeah, I completely know. I think that this is, I think, why we were at the best times good functioning a little bit as roommates, because we would sit and we were happy to talk out the minutia of little plans. What's going to happen? What do you need to do soon? Da 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 da. I could do that for hours. I love it.
You know what? I got to say, like, I know the moving out didn't end on the best circumstances because we both wanted to get out a little sooner. And then I ended up moving shortly afterwards. So, you know, it would have happened anyways. But like, I truly learned so much from you. And I am so grateful for that time together. And I feel like it really made me function in friendships with more maturity moving forward, because reflecting back on like how much you put up with, but then also when you stood your ground, I was like, I learned a lot about boundaries with you because I didn't always have them. And I felt like you were much better at implementing them, or like trying to preserve the ones that we did have. And like, it just showed so much maturity on your behalf. And you're like way younger than me. And it's like, you're rolling in at 19, like running shit. It was wild, but still with like, you had a level head. And we talked about this. There is a pressure when you come into something with a level head. Everybody expects that from you 24 hours a day. So you're not allowed to fuck up. I know that puts you in a pressure place, but it's like,
totally.
You got to know. It just was like, you were such a role model for me. And even as the years passed, seeing each other at not the best light and whatever also contributed to that. Cause I was like, well, if this person who just fucking owns her shit and like knows what she's doing can have these moments of like humility or moments of like down or whatever, it's like, and I think it's okay for her, it must be okay for me.
Oh my God. Exactly. I think watching you through the years from afar, or when we'd see each other close up, I think a thing that it makes me so proud of you, and I feel like I learned from you, is just like, it's the owning it, like, and that if you're vulnerable, it's just risky, but if you're vulnerable and people are still there at the end of the day, then wasn't it so much better to be vulnerable?
Oh my God, like, dude. Just, isn't that so scary,
it's
though?
Scary.
That's my, so there, scary.
There are so many things that would be kind of small that I would have to do, that I would just become paralyzed, be it like interpersonal or like fucking dealing with like taxes or things like that, that would get so stressful. And I remember my therapist just saying once, she's like, as you're describing this, it sounds like you have to jump over like this very, very small crevasse, but the bottom is like endless. So if you misstep, the fall will be so bad, but you know you can make the jump. And I think that's a lot of things for me, where I'm just like, it feels like it could just be the most perilous thing to take that risk and take that jump. But really, I've jumped before. I'll be okay. But it's amazing, you know, when you show your vulnerability and share, which I'm sure this podcast has been very cathartic for you in that way.
Yeah.
that you're okay and people are still around, people still love you. And those are just like very fundamental, basic things that you wish your brain could understand. But it's a lifelong goddamn journey.
You know what is something I feel like we both have in common, because you didn't mention it and I didn't think it? The idea of, like you said, jumping, and neither one of us is thinking or saying that someone's going to catch you on the other side, because it's a solo jump. Did you notice that? It's like you and I just think that, I didn't even think like, oh yeah, and then people to help or this or that. I'm like, yep, I'll do the jump and then I'll keep going and do a couple more jumps. I'm like Tony Hawk. You know what I mean? I'm doing the jump.
Well, there's something like that's sad, but it's also, I just think, very realistic that
it is realistic. You are on your own.
You have to go on your own.
You have to. Always. It doesn't mean you can't accept love and that you're not worthy of it. But it's like, I hate to break it to you guys. You're going to live like born alone for parts of it, live alone, die alone. It's like that's the name of the game. Unless somehow somebody gets wrapped up in your explosion.
You know, if I've, maybe I'll tie someone to my body and drag them kicking and screaming to the field for the explosion. Because I know it's their time, too. I know it's their time, too. And they just don't know it yet.
I'm going down and you're coming with me. Excuse me?
Yeah. When you get, you're going to tether Norm to your back with a big chunky belt and drag him out to a field. Because, you know, he's just not going to be as good once you're gone.
And he won't. I'd love to ask him, but he has lost interest in me and the podcast. And some people are saying almost immediately. A rapid pace, he walked away.
Well, what can you do? That's his journey.
And that's his journey, and bless him. You know what I mean? Okay. Kayla, we've covered a lot today. A lot today. Considering we spent 7 hours uninterrupted together, I was like, oh, I wonder if it's too soon to do the podcast. Will there be stuff to talk about? And then there was just like a million more endless things to talk about.
No, I felt at the end of our hangout, I was like, we gotta go home, it's late. But I honestly could talk to you for hours more. There's so much more to cover.
I had so much energy. There was so much more to cover. And like, we barely even got into gossip, because I try not to gossip too much on the podcast. This is like more heartfelt, but it's like, we're probably going to stop this recording and then have to get a few more details out about a couple of juicy things happening in society. You started off this podcast at a midday positive 5 to 6.
Yes.
How are you feeling now? It's okay, higher, lower, whatever it is. I accept all check-ins.
I'm very honestly, I think it has gone up. Has it gone up a full number? I can't tell because I'm sitting down. I think when I get up and I walk around, I'll see, you know, how it's going through my body. But I would say hopefully a 7. I think it's just so nice to speak with you, and I don't know, it always feels like a boost just to be able to share your feelings with someone that you care about. I feel great. The gust worked.
Excuse that right there just put me at like a 10. I was gonna say, I didn't even have a number to put on it. I was just gonna say, I feel at ease. It's like, I just feel like
I feel
at
very
ease.
Calm.
Yeah, I feel very calm, and like, and I'd had a coffee too, which normally makes me like a little jittery, and I feel so centered right now. But it's like hearing that I'm your gust in this midday. Kayla, that's like an honor that I take with great responsibility. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Oh, wow. Okay. And let's get off on a high note. And it's back down now. We're going to get off on a high note. Kayla, tell us where we can find you. Tell us about your show for people to check out that if they haven't seen it yet, or to check out again.
Oh, yes. Well, I've been really getting off of social media because it's just a very dark.
Yes.
I think it's very dark, and we're going to look back at this time and go, what were we doing? So you can follow me, but am I posting these days? I am not. Am I lurking around and reading people's tweets? I am. but it a thing that I did that came out like right before the pandemic was a TV show that I co-created, show ran, and starred in with my dear friend Evany Rosen called New Eden. It's a mockumentary true crime kind of thing about an all-female cult. I'm very proud of it. For American listeners, you do not have access to it, but if you're Canadian, it's on Crave, and please watch it because we worked very hard on it.
I've only seen like from LA the clips you guys put online on Twitter, and let me tell you, it's everything it's supposed to be. It is so you and Evany. It's creepy. But it's like, you feel so bad for everyone, but also you're like, they seem to be enjoying themselves. So it's like, you're like, well, everybody's really into it. I guess I love this female cult. I'm so excited to be able to watch it next time I'm home for like for some TV time instead of purse fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. We had to get over the purse fights.
Over the purse fight so I can easily access my water for my dry throat. Yeah, Kayla.
Yeah, she was right.
What a delight. Thank you so much for being my Gust as well.
Thank you, Gust. Believe in yourself.